Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
First, we're in depth on how millennials are thinking differently about sex.
You have a small window in which to bang your way through New York City.
No, Josh and I didn't break up so I could see other people. I'm trying to figure out who I am.
That's what our entertainment culture tells us it's like for the hookup, Tinder-loving, commitment-shy millennial generation. A new study on millennials and sex cries foul on that. When you ask millennials, people in their early and mid-20s, about how much sex they're having, you get a whole different picture. And that's what researchers at San Diego State University and other schools did. Here's a few of the highlights. The percentage of millennials who have had no sexual partner since the age of 18 is higher than it was for the generation born in the 1960s and the generations that followed. And more young women are sexually inactive overall than they were 30 years ago. So why might this be the case, and why does it matter? Two guests, your insight too. Let's broaden the scope of this a bit, though. If you're in your 20s, maybe your very early 30s, do you think your generation has gotten a bit of a bad rap for being permissive and commitment shy? Are you dating less because you're focused on other things? That's what I'm hearing about on Twitter this morning. So I want to know if you're in your 20s, maybe 31, 32, if you feel like your generation has gotten a bad rap when it comes to sexuality. And are you dating less because you've got just a whole lot of other stuff to do? Get to me on Twitter. It's at @CarrieMPR. Call us 651-227-6000. 800-242-2828, and Steph Curtis hanging out at nprnews.org/live. Our guest this hour, Gene Twenge, is a professor of psychology at San Diego State University and the author of Generation Me, and she's with us from California, where it's early. Gene, long time no chat. Really good to have you back on the show.
Thank you.
Lisa Wade is with us. She's an associate professor of sociology at Occidental College and the author of American Hookup. And she's with us from New Orleans. And Lisa, welcome to you. It's good to have you on the show.
Thank you so much.
You know, Gene, I'm looking forward to hearing what your conclusions are about this study. But I do want to know how you did it. Who are you talking to, and what kinds of questions are you asking millennials as you're trying to get to this?
So the data come from the General Social Survey, which is a big nationally representative survey of American adults that has been done since the 70s. And they asked people how many sexual partners they'd had since 1989. And the survey's done every year or every other year. And the way they worded the question is an important thing to mention. They asked how many males and how many females people had had sex with. So it does leave it somewhat open-ended how each participant would define how many people they had sex with. But the great thing is this is data that goes over time. It allows us to compare millennials, say, born in the 90s, and 80s, and two Gen Xers born in the 70s and 1960s at the same age. We're also able to do a more sophisticated statistical analysis, including all adults, and doing a more careful control for age and time period. And this does look at just sex since age 18. That's the way they worded the question, looking at only adult sexuality.
Tell me why you emphasize that the way that question was worded is important to understand for what the results are. Why?
So, you know, and when you study sexuality, there's always trade-offs, because if you get too specific and too graphic, people might be uncomfortable answering the question. So here, it's had sex with. The other advantage of asking it that way is then it isn't what people call heteronormative. It means that it includes and can include many different experiences, including same-sex experiences. The potential downside in that question wording, which I always want to make clear, is it that if people are including oral sex partners, then that number is likely to be higher. So it may depend on what people's definition of sex is, kind of like the Bill Clinton question. If most people are defining it as intercourse, then then we're finding that fewer people are participating in that. But if that's how most people are defining it, and they have oral sex partners, then that number would be it's not going to reflect that. But we're not sure. The interesting thing is oral sex has become much more common among younger generations. So if people are counting oral sex partners, then you'd expect the numbers to go the other way.
Right. Well, so Lisa, I think this is something to note here, that maybe there is a changing definition of what sex, having sex, sexuality is generation to generation. Do you think that's possible?
Absolutely. And on college campuses, if you ask students to define what a hookup is, they'll give you all kinds of different answers. But the typical answer would be something between making out and having sex. So there's a lot of ambiguity in their language and in their thinking about what really counts as sexual activity.
Gay says here on Twitter, overwork, high academic pressure, anxiety disorders, isolation, the lore of Netflix. Gene, there's a lot in there, but I think you heard about some of that when you were talking to some of these respondents, didn't you?
Well, no. So this survey doesn't ask why. So for the why question, all we can really do is see what has changed over the same time and then what might either by research or logic be related. So we can pretty much rule out overwork and academic pressure as possible explanations.
Why?
Because fewer young adults are working, and there's several studies showing that both high school and college students spend less time on homework and studying than they did a generation or two ago. So because that doesn't change in the same pattern, we can pretty much rule that one out. The other explanations are a little more plausible, especially in the last few years. Anxiety and depression seem to be up, and then, yes, the lure of Netflix and entertainment, and as some people more succinctly put it, well, they're not having sex because they're on their phones. If you're interacting electronically, then perhaps you're not spending as much time with people in in-person situations where, say, you know, you're thrown together, and that may help people develop attachments that lead to sex.
And Gene, are there other research studies on this where millennials are talking more specifically about why that intersect that you know we should know about as we talk about this today?
Well, you know, really, to do that, you'd need interviews. And it's very difficult to find interviews that have been done now versus with previous generations that are exactly the same. So this is a something that's difficult to do when you're talking about change over time with generations. You really need to directly compare people at the same age to draw conclusions. If you only have interviews, say, from millennials, and you don't have anything to compare it to with previous generations, like boomers and Gen Xers, who apparently were hooking up, even if they didn't call it that, just as much or more. Then, you know, you can't really compare.
Okay, got it. To the phones here to Billy in Minneapolis. Hey, Billy, what's your experience with this? Hi.
Yeah, hi. I was just calling in to say I'm 31. I'm getting married in a month, which is great. But I'm surprised at the results because I feel like my single friends are having lots of sexual encounters. A lot of times just like with strangers through websites.
Like through Tinder and some of the other apps?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Lisa, I think this is the perception of what's going on in this generation, and maybe Billy's friends are more around his age group, and I think this is something that you've looked into for your book on hookups on college campuses.
Sure. College students tend to pretty severely overestimate the amount of casual sex that their peers are having, as well as how much they like it.
Okay, why? Why does that happen?
In one study, we found that there was an overestimation by 25 times. So it can be pretty extreme. Michael Kimmel in Guyland says that he thinks college men think that 80% of their peers are having sex every given weekend, which is actually the number of people that have ever had sex.
Is that right? Wow.
So there's pretty severe overestimation. And I actually think that social media is part of why, because the things that pop up on social media tend to be the most exciting, most party-oriented kind of things. And so it really gives the impression that everyone is out there having a lot of sex all the time.
Chelsea says on Twitter, I'm a 28-year-old virgin, ain't got no time for babies, but I'm commitment shy too because of what happened to my parents' generation. I'm nervous about STDs, unplanned everything. Jean, what do you hear in her reference to her parents' generation? I don't know if she's referring to divorce or what there.
Well, Gen Xers, who what we found is were much less likely to be sexually inactive, also went through a lot of divorces. What I hear in that is a interest in safety, which is one of the big themes of this generation of millennials and the generation following them, who I'd like to call iGen, like iPods and iPhones. That's folks born 95 and later, so a little bit younger than the caller. But there's this interest in both physical and emotional safety that may partially go into why there's often this reluctance about relationships. And the idea of this generation being commitment shy isn't just a rumor. Gallup looked very carefully at this and found, well, we already know the marriage rate is much lower. People in their 20s are much less likely now to be married than they were a generation or two ago. They also found that the percentage of those in their 20s who were living together with a partner had stayed about the same. You put those together, what you get is that a much higher percentage are not living with a partner, married or not. So I don't know if it's exactly because of being commitment shy, but it is clear that millennials are putting off being in a committed partnership.
Lisa, I wondered if there could be, to what Jean is saying here, if there could be something to the idea that, as we know, millennials are waiting longer to marry, that they feel they have more time to explore relationships, so they're not under pressure to have more of these sexual experiences in a shorter amount of time. You know, am I extrapolating too much here, or might there be something to that?
You know, when I followed 101 college students in their freshman year, and there's a lot of bravado around that. So a lot of students will say, oh, I'm too busy. I have my careers. I really need to study hard. I don't have time for a relationship. And I think that that is a message that really resonates with that generation. But underneath that, if you ask them, But would you like to be in a committed relationship? Then over 70% of both men and women say that they would. And so there is this disconnect between these sort of brave narratives about what they really think they should want and should be doing and what, in a way, they do want, but also this desire to connect that they're really missing out on in college.
I think that's something that maybe I'll add to our outreach for listeners this morning. So if you've tuned in this morning, we're talking about some pretty interesting social science around how millennials approach sexuality. Yes, another one of those millennial shows. And what the studies show is that millennials are apparently having less sex than generations in the 60s and some of the generations that preceded them. And our guests are talking to us a little bit about their own research and then perhaps some of the conclusions that we can draw from that. Jean Twenge with us, a professor of psychology and the author of Generation Me, and Lisa Wade, an associate professor of sociology at Occidental College. So what I want to hear from you, and I've broadened the scope a little bit because, 20 to 24, I'd like to hear some input from a number of you. If you're in your 20s and maybe your early 30s, I wonder if you think your generation has gotten kind of a bad rap for this idea of being permissive and commitment shy. Maybe you're dating because you have a lot of other things to do. And what about what Lisa just said on there's this perception that everybody's out there and it's a very permissive kind of culture? But really, you lean in more to the idea of commitment. So looking to hear from you this morning on Twitter and getting some good stuff here, at Carrie NPR. And then by phone, 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, and online at nprnews.org/live. Jean, Bob in St. Paul called to ask if pornography, the influence of pornography, has created more of this kind of not needing to have a physical relationship because there are other ways to experience sexuality.
That is one possibility. So there's a few studies suggesting that young men who watch a lot of pornography become less interested in marriage, for example. And overall, more anecdotally, there are these a lot of young men now. So there's a cover story in Time magazine when they were talking about this, where many of them are saying, yep, that's how I can satisfy myself. Or they'll even say, you know, watching a lot of pornography, because many of this generation, they have watched pornography from very young ages because it's so available on the internet. So this is kind of a new thing that they have been exposed to it at such an early age and so constantly. And many of them say, well, I've watched so much of that, I can't even get aroused for real sex with a real woman.
Wow. You know, Lisa, I was talking to Peggy Ornstein. You're probably aware of her newest book, Girls and Sex. Mm-hmm. And she was talking about the influence of pornography and that even though young adults know that porn is about as realistic as pro wrestling, I think those are her words, they arrive at sexual experiences believing that that's how a sexual experience is going to be. And I wonder what you think of that idea and where for you pornography fits into this.
Well, one way to describe what we see in mainstream pornography is that we see hot sex and cold emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the same ideal that students will articulate if you ask them what hookup culture is all about. It's about having hot sex but being cold emotionally. And they often describe the ideal hookup as emotionless or meaningless sex.
Wow.
And a third of my students were sexually inactive in their freshman year. So a large proportion of these freshmen were opting out. Almost all of them were opting out specifically because they didn't want to have that kind of sexual encounter. So they were okay with casual sex. They weren't opposed to that, but they didn't like the idea of having cold, emotionless, and possibly cruel sex with one another. They would have been happy to have hot sex and warm emotions. They wanted to at least be in like, if not in love.
So
that is really off script in hookup culture.
Yeah, so Lisa, this is really interesting and kind of confusing. So where does the idea, why is there such belief in this idea that in the hookup culture, you are really in it and with it if your sexual encounters don't mean much to you, but you're having a lot of the sexual encounters, if what you've just said is true?
If I had to sum it up, and Dr. Twenge's research, other research actually supports this as well, what we have is a generation of women who have been taught from the very moment that they are born that they can do anything that they want to do. And what we really mean by that is you can do anything that boys do. And throughout their childhood and young adulthood, they're rewarded consistently for making those choices. And so when they get to college campuses, they're doing the exact same thing. They're trying to enact a stereotypical male sexuality because doing stereotypical male stuff has been the thing that they've been most rewarded for much of their lives. And so when everyone on campus is trying to perform a stereotypical male sexuality, then that's exactly what you get, something that looks like pornography.
Jean, what would you add to that?
So, yeah, I think that's absolutely right on. And I would add just even a little bit of a bigger, broader context, which is that this also echoes the very prevalent theme of increasing individualism, that individualism is a cultural system that places more emphasis on the self and less on others. So this generation has heard you can be anything you want to be. They've also heard you don't need someone else to make you happy. You can make yourself happy. Many college students also talk about relationships are going to keep them from meeting their goals. So that's another reason they have this idea of the emotionless hookups. Like, I'm not going to get involved in that. There's this emotional safety part too. And then there's also this individualism, which is why, you know, I call millennials Generation Me, of I need to do what I need to do, and I don't need anybody else to make me happy. And if I do, then I'm weak. And, of course, the problem is psychologically it's not true.
Well,
if you need somebody else, it means you're human.
Oh, exactly. But I was just going to say, this goes against the human condition, doesn't it, to make connections?
I think that it does. So it remains to be seen, what the mental health effects of the hookup culture are. But if I had to guess, I would say they're not going to be good because we do need other people.
From Twitter, a listener says, I think we date less and do little of anything that requires effort and vulnerability. Another listener says, also because millennials all live at home due to student loans and no job. Yeah, I guess it's a little more difficult to play out those sexual adventures if you're living at home. Step off the page.
Rick says, I'm 28 and still a virgin. I just haven't cared enough to pursue it, and I'm trying to get myself into a position where I'm somewhat financially stable. My friends were all the time talking about their sex lives, and it made me queasy. I'd rather not hear about that sort of thing. This is a profoundly private matter to my eyes. For me, it's not about religion, because I don't follow religion. I don't have those moral hang-ups.
Oh. To the phones to Carl in Minnetonka. Hey, Carl, you're in your early 20s. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm 22 years old, and I'm in a two-year relationship right now with a 22-year-old.
Well, tell me how you're thinking about this, then.
You know, I'm actually starting to disagree a little bit with your point that we're commitment shy,
sure.
that we're kind of afraid of commitment. I think it's more that we realize our time is limited and that we want to get it right the first time, and that we're very picky when it comes to our partners. So I don't think it's that we're afraid of getting hurt or afraid that we're not going to make the, you know, that we're going to do something wrong. It's more that we want to find the right person and not waste our time, you know, pursuing something wrong, investing a lot of time, money, and energy into a relationship that isn't going to work out.
Lisa, how does Carl's remarks there sound to you?
Well, the worst thing you can get called on a college campus these days isn't what it used to be, slut, and it's not even the more hookup culture consistent prude. It's desperate. Being clingy, acting as if you need someone is considered pathetic. And unfortunately, the way in which young college students are getting into relationships is via hookups. So there's no alternative route. You either hook up and then hook up with the same person over time and then eventually get into a relationship, which I do think most students want, or you don't get into a relationship at all. And so one of the reasons that this third of students isn't actually participating in either hookups or relationships is because they're not willing to take the steps that's necessary to get them there.
I have to say, this has been the revelation of this show for me, that that even though it is our human impulse to want deep connection, that a lot of acting out as if you could care less has permeated this generation so deeply. I mean, Lisa, it goes against everything to me that seems kind of natural.
It's heartbreaking. It was heartbreaking to follow these 101 students that I got to know very, very well. And the isolation that a lot of the students who opted out of hookup culture experienced, it was very acute. And then the kind of compromises that a lot of the students who were ambivalent about participating in hookup culture had, had made and engaging in a kind of sexual activity that they found to be mixed bag at best, it exposed them to a lot of heartache.
Lisa says on Twitter, I work with many young adults. Because of social media, they worry about judgment, including everything, including sex. And this is scary. Jean, is there something that speaks to you about that remark, this idea of being judged?
Well, that is pervasive on sexual and on social media, especially around sexuality. It's also the idea of, you know, social media, you're always supposed to be positive about everything. That's another standard. And that's a very difficult standard to live up to. And it also always looks like everybody else is having more fun than you are.
A step off the page.
Eva says, I'm 25, and I think the study that millennials are having less sex is absolutely true. The hypersexualized Bush era in the early 2000s with MTV and shows like Jersey Shore negatively impacted the image of sexual encounters our generation should have. We are just trying to recover.
To the phones to Mark in Rochester. Hey, Mark, how old are you?
I'm 29.
How are you thinking about this discussion?
Well, I found it very interesting thus far. The only comment I wanted to make was more in relation to the millennials and committed relationships.
Yeah.
I've been married 5 years now, and it's wonderful. I love being married, but it definitely takes work. And I guess the thing that I wanted to say is I've found that a lot of millennials they shy away from these committed relationships, specifically marriage, because marriage is not an easy thing. I mean, it's a wonderful joy, and I love being married. But my wife and I have to continually choose to love each other every day, put each other first, and really keep pursuing each other. And I don't think that relationship model is really, it hasn't really been shown. We have a lot of older married couples in our culture, but a lot of millennials come from divorced families now. So I was fortunate to have an excellent model in my parents. But I think what we need to do is start modeling how you can have healthy marriage relationships again, because that really is the key. And it takes work. I think a lot of people in general underestimate what it takes to have a healthy relationship. And from that, you know, you can have a healthy sexual relationship. So,
Mark, you sound like a very wise 29-year-old. I really appreciate the call. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot.
Gene, what would you say to that?
Yeah, I would agree. So, yes, marriage and committed relationships take work. They take sacrifice, and that doesn't come as naturally to a generation raised with these ideas of always putting yourself first. Sometimes to try to quantify these things, I draw from this great resource, the Google Books database. You can look up any word or any phrase up to 5 words in books. And one thing I looked up recently is the phrase, never compromise. And that has gone way up in use. But of course, committed relationships, the essence of them is compromise. You do have to compromise. So that highly individualistic attitude makes things very difficult once you are in a committed relationship. You do have to compromise. You do have to sacrifice. And you do often have to put the other person's needs ahead of your own, or at least try.
You know, Andy says on Twitter, I'm 32. A lot of my generation grew up in broken homes. We saw a lot of terrible relationships steering us away from commitment. Although, Lisa, in some ways I would think that that would just contribute to more sex, less commitment, but we're seeing less sex and maybe less commitment. How would you look at that?
I think that a lot of the women in particular saw those types of relationships, and they recognized that there was some risk of getting trapped or ending up in trouble if their relationships did end. So that sort of supports the women's idea that what they need to do in college is focus on their own educational trajectory and their future careers.
If you've tuned into the conversation this hour, Lisa Wade is one of our guests. She's a professor of sociology at Occidental College, the author of American Hookup. Gene Twenge with us, a professor of psychology at San Diego State and the author of Generation Me. And it's a show of trying to make sense about this new social science around the millennial generation apparently having less sex than generations that preceded them. Gene, I want to circle back to something that you said. These kinds of questions are being asked of generations going back, 30 years now? Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. So a long time. This is not just a focus on the millennials, but a very interesting result of the millennia. So decades of asking different generations about their ideas around sexuality and seeing a result that was worth talking about this morning, which is what we're doing. So I'm broadening the scope a little bit about beyond just the 20s here. If you're in your 20s, your very early 30s, I want to hear from you this morning on this idea of commitment and permissiveness and sexuality. Does that thing that we're hearing from a lot of people on Twitter about growing up in dysfunctional homes where you saw broken relationships, you were part of maybe perhaps the second marriage, the blended family, has that influenced maybe the way you feel about commitment and sexuality? Are you dating less because you're focused on other more important things? 800-242-2828, 651-227-6000. Claire says on Twitter, hitting us where it hurts. First, we were just cutthroat, selfish millennials, but now we're also frigid nerds who are not getting laid. Claire, we're not saying that. It's not as simple as that. To the phones, to Isaac in Rochester. Hey, Isaac. Hi. Thanks for waiting.
Hey. I had a couple of things to say. Okay. First of all, one, how do you think that the financial impact, the financial situations that we're put in, impacts us as people in relationships? Because yes, I understand that relationships do matter, but at the same time, we are like drilled into our head that that we need to get good grades, to get, get a good, for a good resume so that we can get a good job and pay off our student loans and everything. And then the second one, or the second part that I was going to say is, it's absolutely true that we have followed our previous generations because, or and we are less attached because we've seen our parents go through a divorce. Really? We've seen our friends have to deal with shuttling from home to home. It's not as simple, and we're afraid that we don't want our kids to go through that same problem. So we're trying to find that perfect one.
Okay. Jean, on the financial issues, and then the second part of that, if you would.
Sure. So, yeah, the financial issues are an interesting piece here. So, you know, we know from other research that millennials are living with their parents well into their, more of them are living with their parents well into their 20s compared to previous generations. And, you know, somewhat to the researcher's surprise, this has been true even after we've finally kicked the Great Recession to the side. So, It's possibly because of the very hefty student loans are making things economically difficult for this generation, and they have still not really reached that level of employment that was in place, you know, 10 years ago before the recession hit. So there's a lot of economic issues going on that very well might be at play here, both for sexuality and for committed relationships. If you're living with your parents, it's less likely you're going to be bringing sexual partners home, and it's less likely you're going to get married. The divorce piece is certainly a possibility. What's intriguing, though, is that the divorce rate peaked in the early 80s and has actually gone down since then. So it's Gen Xers born in the 60s and 70s who were mostly impacted by, or were impacted more by that, and where we see the highest percentage of those sexually inactive is those born in the 90s, with a little less impact of that. I don't deny that that may have had an impact on the way that they see relationships and sexuality, but given the actual decline in the divorce rate since the early 80s, I would expect that impact to be a little less than it was for the Gen Xers and early millennials.
May Rayri in Minneapolis called, and she says she's a millennial, she's single, she's 32, she's part of the GLBT community, and she says she sees a lot of people in that community who are sexually active, but she isn't herself. Lisa, I was wondering how that breaks down in your research that you've done.
Sure. On college campuses, the LGBT community were some of the first people to actually use hookup apps, and in part because they didn't have as deep of a hookup pool on college campuses. They were statistically a minority, not to mention the fact that a lot of the parties that spur hookups are very, very heterosexually charged. And so they were among the first people to start using hookup apps to find one another. And often they would find people to hook up with that weren't on college campuses at all. If a campus has a big enough community of people that identify as non-heterosexual, then we tend to see on-campus hookup cultures that are separate and specific. But in general, the main culture is still very centered on heterosexual encounters.
Lainey says, I just turned 30. I definitely don't have a model for how to love someone and also fight with and be angry at them. Boy, it's really intriguing how often this is turned up in this. She also adds, also, I don't date because I have a full-time job and a side hustle. Current strategy is to be awesome, hoping someone awesome will show up. And I'm sure they will, Steph. That happened to you, didn't it?
It did.
Just being awesome and then
just
somebody showed up.
Awesome.
Okay,
that's it,
see?
Man. Barbara says, for some generations, it's been too much sex. Now it's too little sex. What are we looking for? Just the right amount of sex? And AE asks, are depression rates higher for this demographic? Huh. Also, just thinking, some of us also identify as asexual or are still figuring out what we are looking for in relationships.
Lisa, Jean, the intersection of mental health here. Can you say anything about that?
So there's some data to suggest that mental health just in the last few years has really started to falter. So there's a big survey of entering college students that asks them, in the last year, did you feel overwhelmed by all you have to do? And that's been on the rise for a while, but it's ticked up particularly steeply in the last couple of years. And then another asks if they felt depressed, and that's gone up. That's not the best way to ask it from a clinical psychology point of view, but there's another national study of teens that finds the same thing, that the percentage who are experiencing major depression has gone up by quite a bit in the last few years. And we also know that about 1 out of 10 Americans takes an antidepressant. Those can have sexual side effects. So I think that may be playing a role here.
Lisa, did you want to add something to that?
Yeah. One study found that 1 in 3 students on college campuses reported that their intimate relationships were traumatic. Mm-hmm. So, and that's separate from the rates of sexual assault and harassment that we also see that are also extraordinarily high. So there's good evidence as well that this rise in depression and anxiety is related specifically to the sexual cultures on campus.
I'm getting quite a few questions on Twitter here about abstinence-only education. So I'll take that up on the other side of news with Lisa and Jean. And by the way, this is a good chance for me to mention that we did a show, I think about 2 weeks ago, Steph, was out on sex education. And like whether it has changed and encompassed the way the kind of material that kids are exposed to these days, how to make it most effective. So
I'll find a link to that and I'll put it on nprnews.org/live.
Yeah, link there to our previous show on sex ed. And we'll talk about that with Lisa and Jean here on the other side of news as our conversation about millennials and sexuality continues. But Phil, what are you watching this hour?
Hi, Carrie. Turkish police have launched simultaneous raids in 18 cities against companies linked to U.S.-based Muslim cleric Fethullah Gulen. Turkey accuses Gulen of being the mastermind behind Turkey's failed July 15th coup attempt and has branded his movement a terror organization. Gulen denies involvement. Meanwhile, a string of bombings in eastern Turkey have killed 11 people and wounded more than 200. The attacks are blamed on Kurdish rebels. It's unclear how many southern Louisiana residents flooded out of their homes will need temporary housing. An estimated 40,000 homes have been damaged by deadly flooding. Some people are staying in shelters or sleeping in trailers on their front lawns. State officials are urging landlords to allow short-term leases and encouraging people to rent out any empty space available. The fire chief in San Bernardino County, California, warns there will be a lot of families that come home to nothing when they are allowed to return to their fire-ravaged homes. The blaze has raged across 40 square miles, and authorities say they are not sure how many homes have been destroyed by the fire. 3 U.S. Olympic swimmers meet with Brazilian authorities today to discuss a reported robbery. 12-time medalist Ryan Lochte says he and his teammates were held up at gunpoint after a party. Lochte has returned to the U.S., but 2 swimmers were pulled off of a flight home yesterday. Hillary Clinton is meeting today with law enforcement leaders. One of them, retiring New York Police Commissioner William Bratton, has recently said Donald Trump's candidacy scared him. Trump has accused Clinton of being against the police. More news ahead on NPR News. The time now is 9:44.
Big news here on the Jeffrey Toobin Show. We have moved it from the Fitzgerald Theater to Westminster Town Hall Forum. Boy, we're excited to be down there at Westminster. They've been so welcoming. September 28th with Jeffrey Toobin, his new book about the kidnapping of Patty Hearst, the 1970s counterculture, and the Minnesota ties to all of that. We'll talk politics. We'll talk about his book. We'll take your questions. September 28th at the Westminster Town Hall Forum. It is free.
Programming supported by the Heart Center at University of Minnesota Masonic Children's Hospital, providing state-of-the-art surgery, treatment for congenital heart disease, transplant, and exceptional care for children from birth to adulthood. mhealth.org/heartcenter.
Back to the conversation now. Jean Twenge with us from San Diego State. Lisa Wade with us from Occidental College. They're both authors of books, Generation Me and American Hookup. Lisa, let me come back to this sex ed question that's turning up a lot on Twitter. And then somebody just added here a minute ago, abstinence education in America versus the European model. Can you add anything to this?
I'm so glad this got asked. You know, the modern sex education has its roots in the HIV fear. And so it has been for decades a fear-based sort of education. Here are the dangers that you might encounter, and sometimes here's how to protect yourself from those dangers. And the corrective that I've seen to that is that people are trying to do pleasure education, like here's some of the positive things that can come out of sexuality. But I feel like on college campuses, there's two problems with this pleasure idea. And one is that it's very intimidating. Students are just, especially traditional age college students, are just beginning to become sexually active. Half of them are virgins when they arrive on campus. Mm. And so to then end up going to a sex positive workshop where they talk about dildos and multiple orgasms is just way, way too much information for them. And it also encourages this sort of competitive, I must give someone an orgasm. This pleasure and the way in which there's a lot of pressure on maximizing the pleasure of a sexual encounter. What I'd like to see instead is a sex education that emphasizes kindness and thoughtfulness. What students really need and what they don't know that they are entitled to is someone who will be nice to them when they're sexually active with them. And I think that would go a long way towards solving a lot of our problems on campus.
I guess I'm trying to think of who's right for that kind of instruction. I don't know if it's the health teacher, is it?
Sure. We need to be doing all kinds of education around what are healthy relationships looking like? What kind of behavior can you expect from a sexual partner? And what is not just criminal? We talk a lot about, you know,
Definitely.
Sexual assault and what's criminal,
Consent,
but
right.
what's cruel.
Yeah. Sarah says on Twitter, abstinence-only education needs to be replaced with effective sex ed. And then a call here, Jean, for you from Justin in Fort Dodge, Iowa. Hey, Justin, hi. Justin, are you there? Might have lost him. I think, Gene, he was going to say that the focus has really shifted, that millennials have a lot of this knowledge about STDs and AIDS, and we're approaching the topic with more maturity than other generations did. Is there something to that?
So there's definitely this aspect, again, of this emphasis on, you know, STD and AIDS showing up in sex education. In fact, we found that this move towards sexual inactivity during young adulthood began with the generation born in the 70s, who was the first to be adolescents, you know, after the AIDS crisis hit. And then, you know, that's what sex ed has emphasized. So that could be playing a role in this, in there being, you know, more, you know, caution around these ideas. And it also bears mentioning, I think, that this trend toward not having sex also shows up among teenagers. So the Center for Disease Control does a study of high school students every other year. And in 1991, 54% of high school students had sexual intercourse. And by 2015, that had dropped to 41%. Oh. So there's been an especially big change just in the last few years. So I think these questions around sexual education are very relevant because we're seeing these trends begin with teenagers and then continue into young adulthood.
Does that tell you also, Gene, why teen pregnancy rates are down, or isn't there a direct connection there?
It suggests there is because that's correct. Teen pregnancy rates are at historic lows, I believe all-time lows. And that might partially be due to more consistent use of birth control, but it's probably also due to fewer teens having sex at all.
A call here from Becky in St. Paul. Becky, thanks so much for waiting. Hi.
Hi.
Tell me what you're thinking about. Yeah.
So I'm 29, and maybe the culture has changed on campuses more than I realized since I was an undergrad, but amongst my friend group, I was sexually inactive during undergrad, but I was also the only one of my friends to engage in hookups with any frequency once I got out of college.
Uh-huh.
They were all very much commitment people, and they were able to find relationships without hooking up, and as far as I can tell, they never had difficulty finding relationships, but they had they sort of struggled to accept that my hookups were what I wanted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And now I'm in a relationship of 1 year, and it seems like every generation, I mean, not that I can, you know, cite chapter and verse when this happens, but every generation, the older generation is like, they're doing this too much. They're doing it too little. They're doing it too fast. They're doing it too slow. Maybe we're just doing it just like everybody else. And maybe rates are a little higher. Maybe rates are a little lower. Maybe we define sex a little bit differently, but I think it's all probably going to come out in the wash.
Okay. Good points. Becky, I want to put that point to both of our scientists here because they know how to interpret the data. Lisa, what would you say?
Well, she's right. She's right that there tends to be this perennial concern with what young people are doing sexually. But I think that there's a good reason to be concerned, and there's a scientific reason to be interested to begin with, and I think that we all probably hope that we're moving in a positive direction, that the sexuality that young students are having the opportunity to experience is helping them grow and become healthy sexual adults and not hurting them along the way. And so I understand the frustration of the young people these days narrative, but I also think it's valuable to be paying attention and really thinking about what's going on.
I do too, because Gina makes for excellent talk show fodder here. So keep it coming. What else did you want to say?
So it is certainly true. There's the old canard of, oh, you know, the older generation is always, you know, very concerned about what the young generation is doing. But, you know, younger folks take that as a compliment, that older people are concerned for your welfare and what you're doing. And it's also just a, you know, fascinating thing to consider how cultures have changed and how that is affecting young people. And the perspective I always want to remind people is these are larger cultural changes, and that's where it comes from. So none of this is about fault or blaming.
Exactly.
It's affecting everybody, and that affects, you know, younger generations the most. And that's also why I think it's so important to draw from these types of surveys where you're finding out from young people themselves, you know, what they're doing and not what older people think they're doing or even what younger people think other young people are doing.
Totally.
What are they doing themselves? What do they have to say? Let's listen to young people and about their experiences and their views just to find out, you know, how those differ from previous generations.
Raina in Sioux Falls called to say that she's 30. She volunteers at a suicide help center. She's a lesbian. She has a child. She doesn't want to rearrange her schedule to fit someone else's, feels like she wouldn't be doing as much good. Good reasoning there. Steph, off the page.
Stacy says, I wonder what role the culture of online dating might play in this trend. My experience in online dating is that it creates an illusion of limitless availability of possible partners that leaves daters less likely to wait to develop a bond that might lead to a sexual relationship. If there's no immediate spark, they just move on. Just like a restaurant menu that offers too many choices. Is a too large pool of possible partners making us wishy-washy?
Lisa, I was wondering about the tyranny of choice. Now, not in an app like Tinder, maybe just the idea of the online dating. There's always someone more interesting around the corner.
That's an interesting hypothesis, and it's been thrown out there before. But I don't think we know the answer to that question. When we do look at, you know, are all of these new technologies changing our behavior, we don't generally find that they do. They tend to reproduce our real life behavior in online form. So I think that the weight of that towards that question, the weight is towards no, but we don't really know for sure.
Okay. To the phones to Jared in St. Paul. Hey, Jared, where do you come at this from?
Oh, I'm sorry. Hi.
Hi.
I had the phone on mute. yeah, my name's Jared. I'm in St. Paul. I'm a priest here at an Episcopal church. And I thought I had a couple different, I guess, points of connection
sure.
to the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
One, I do a lot of premarital counseling with couples who are coming to me who are millennials, and their perspectives are, of course, diverse, and there are a couple trends that show up as I listen to what they're looking for in long-term relationships that I thought were interesting. I myself have been married since my 20s, and so I bring that as well. I was born in 1980, so that makes me on the very cusp of millennial. Sometimes I feel like a Gen Xer, sometimes not. And I guess some of the threads that have been interesting and I feel like can generate even further conversation are the point you were making, one of your callers was making about pragmatism, or the notion that sex and relationships can often, you know, yield pragmatic goods, you know, your animal need or whatever you're hoping to get from the encounter. And one of your experts talked about wishing sex ed could have more of a focus on kindness or what a relationship
is. Yeah, that was
about.
Lisa. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think I hear that in the conversations I'm having about marriage, that it's sort of half of the couples coming in sort of come with perhaps a larger culture has imposed upon them a need to look at marriage as a pragmatic good. And so they're sort of making that final step into a long-term relationship that fits their life needs right now, like children. And I hear a lot of conversation about how they've wrapped up their career ambitions and they're getting started on their career. They know where they're going. They've started to pay on their loans. And so now they want to get married. And so pragmatically, marriage seems to fit right now. Then the other half of the couples, you hear them talking about the need for sort of long-term relational needs, you know, kindness and intimacy and connection. So I find there's a diversity among millennials when they come to the door looking to get married and their kind of perspective on what sex and relationship is all about.
Gene and Jared, I'm a little tight on time here, Jared. I thought I might just ask Gene about your last point there because I didn't give her a chance to weigh in on that. Gene, would you say something to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's clearly that still that human need for that connection and that kindness. That is not going to change. That is not something that has really shifted over the generations. What's shifted is the culture around us, which tries to tell us that we don't need that, yet people are still seeking that. So I think people will still continue to get married. It's just a question of how many, and that they're putting it off for longer.
And how much time, what kind of a difference is it, Gene, when we talk about marriage later? I mean, are we looking at 2 or 3 years, or is it wider than that now?
So in 1970, the average woman got married for the first time at 21, and now it's 27.
Yeah. Wow. Big change. For a sociologist, a psychologist like you, that's a significant culture change, isn't it?
Absolutely. And for a while, people thought that was replaced by living together. But just in the last 10 years or so, it appears that that's not the case. So people are putting off any kind of committed relationship until later. I mean, really, what we find, especially if we put this sexuality study into the mix, the entire reproductive timeline has shifted later. First sex, maybe first committed relationship, first child, all of that is being shifted until later in life.
Gene, I really thank you for being on the show again. It's good to talk to you.
You too.
Thank you. Gene Twenge with us from San Diego State. Lisa, thank you very much for joining the discussion. Really insightful for us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Lisa Wade with us from Occidental University, author of American Hookup, Gene Twenge's Generation Me. And Jocelyn says she thinks that people in my parents' generation feel the need to be in a relationship because that's what's expected. Thinks that millennials feel that if they end up alone, it'll be okay. You can still talk to me about this on Twitter. It's at Carrie, KerriMPR. I'll retweet as many of your comments as I can.